Going to read a little bit from Genesis. It'll set the tone for the rest of the night. There were giants in the earth in those days. And also after that, when the sons of God came into the daughters of men, and they bore children to them, the same became men, and they were giants on the earth in those days. Giants. In a moment, Richard Dewhurst joins us with his incredible research and story, The Ancient Giants Who Ruled America. That's next on Coast to Coast AM. Hard to imagine giants roaming the planet, but they apparently did. Richard Dewhurst is the Emmy Award-winning writer, by the way, of the HBO film feature documentary, Dear America, Letters Home from Vietnam, graduate of NYU with degrees in journalism, film, television. He's written and edited for the History Channel. You know, we're on that with Ancient Aliens, Arts and Entertainment Channel, PBS, Fox Television, Fox Films, ABC News, TNT. My gosh, what a varied background, Richard. And of course, giants. How did you get into the field of giants?
Well, I like to joke that the short answer is that I'm tall.
you ain't that tall.
At 6'6", I don't qualify quite as a giant. But over the years as a journalist and documentary filmmaker, I was always interested in giant stories. So I started a sort of a Fortean file on the side and collected, you know, what were mostly anecdotal or at best blurbs of references to giants. And finally, a couple years ago, I had some time on my hands, and I decided I'd get to the bottom of the thing. So I subscribed to several online newspaper archive services that covered several hundred years of American publications, and I began trying to cross-reference the articles I had with search engines. And in the beginning, I was only finding about 25% of what I was looking for. And finally, out of frustration, I used the word search headline service on the thing, and I plugged in, I think the first headline was Giant Skeletons Unearthed. No publications, no dates, nothing. And I got 30 hits. And from there, you know, I started feeding more headlines in, and eventually, I ended up with over 800 articles, and they covered every state in the union. And I was just completely astonished. And so I started telling my friends, these articles are not hoaxes. They're you know, and they're saying, "Oh, come on, who says? You know, I don't believe this. A bunch of malarkey." You know. So finally, I decided to, in writing the book, that I would have to include the actual articles in the book, at least enough of an overview, so that the reader himself could make up their own minds on the subject.
Richard, this has been, for me, an incredible story. And the fact that you went out and researched this and uncovered the things that we're going to talk about tonight, absolutely mind-boggling. But does it convince you that the account in Genesis might be accurate?
Yes. It made me reappraise practically, well, first of all, everything I was ever taught about American history. And then, by extension, I had to reappraise the myths of the world regarding giants. And my inescapable conclusion is that these stories are based in fact.
That's amazing when you think of it. How tall are we talking about?
Well, the general yardstick, and, you know, I've gotten a little criticism from people saying, well, these aren't giants. I didn't categorize them as giants. The writers of the stories did, first of all. And the general starting point is 7 feet, and a large majority of the finds are between 7 and 9 feet. But I have multiple cases going up to 12 feet, and then one extraordinary account of an 18-footer. So, basically, though, we're talking 7 to 12 feet.
It was amazing. Well, look, the dinosaurs were huge. Things were huge in that time period for whatever reason. And again, if you look at Genesis and you tie that in, it makes a lot of sense. How did you key in, Richard, on North America?
Well, basically, most of the references to newspaper finds were in North America. So that's what I used as the yardstick to begin my research. And then I was just, I mean, it was literally like going down the rabbit hole. I mean, you know, some days I would wake up and say, did I really read this yesterday? And we're talking about reputable newspapers here and sourced finds with multiple witnesses, museum involvement, Smithsonian involvement everywhere. So, as a, you know, an extension to this thing, I'm now looking worldwide at, you know, to try and find hard, concrete evidence across the globe, and it's certainly there.
Yeah, it's got to be all over the place. I want to read a quote that's in your book, of course, from Abraham Lincoln. Which, of course, you know, he spent most of his day in Illinois. The eyes of that species of extinct giants whose bones fill the mounds of America have gazed on Niagara as ours do now. What did he mean by that?
Well, what he was giving a speech at Niagara Falls, and he was reflecting the fact that in the 19th century, this knowledge of the giants was widespread. In account after account of the 19th century newspaper articles, not only are they detailed, but they imply a familiarity with the subject that has been completely lost in the last 100 years. I mean, there's a number of interesting things about that quote. The area that he gave a speech in is very near Dunville, New York, Ontario. It's right on the line there. And in the book, I talk about a huge 150-acre-plus city they found there with multiple giant burials, houses with chimneys, a blacksmith forge with 2 tons of charcoal and evidence of gold and silver work. And that was on the Grand River. And then further down the Grand River in Cuyahoga, New York, they found what was called the Cemetery of Giants, which were 200 giants, they found, 7 to 9 feet. And these finds continued down New York State, all the way down into Florida, and all the way out the West Coast to Catalina Island.
Richard, were there ever any Native American accounts of giants?
Multiple legends of Native Americans referring to previous in a number of the accounts where they talk to the Native Americans and they ask them, did you erect these mounds? They say no. Previous race of giants did.
Where'd they go? What happened to them?
Pardon me?
What happened to the giants? I mean, where'd they go?
Well, the mound builder culture collapsed around 1200 AD to 1400 AD, and the Indian accounts say that they were destroyed by natural cataclysms or disease. There's, you know, a sort of two legends concerning it. And then the Paiute Indians out in Nevada and Arizona referred to the giants as the Sitaka, and which means two-lay-eaters. And that refers to Lake Lahontan out there, which was this huge freshwater lake that was destroyed by the Lassen volcano around 5,000 BC. We can get into some of the mythology there. The interesting thing, though, is that it's one of the last remnants stories of the giants. They say they drove the last of these giants into Lovelock Cave, where they set them on fire.
My.
And we can talk about the finds at Lovelock Cave, but they found it under bat guano out there. University researchers found groups of 6 to 8 foot giants, and so it lends a lot of credence to some of these legends.
Let's start with the explorer John Wesley Powell. What was his involvement with this?
Well, John Wesley Powell was the first director of the Bureau of Ethnology of the Smithsonian, and in 1879. He issued the first official paper on the subject, which was called On the Limitation of the Use of Certain Anthropological Data. And basically in there, he said that, now Powell was a famous Western explorer, and he was appointed to the position because they felt he had a familiarity with the Indian tribes, and he had no anthropological background and no training in language or anything else. the paper says categorically that the fines made in America were pertaining to writing or European contact. There's absolutely no proof for it, and the official policy, which became the Powell Doctrine, was to disallow any evidence of pre-Columbian contact. And that policy basically is still in place. So constantly in the articles, there's either Smithsonian involvement up front, or the Smithsonian comes out to the find, or the bones are shipped to the Smithsonian.
So are you saying, Richard, that most, if not all, of the skeletons of these giants are confiscated, are grabbed, are hidden before anybody gets a chance to really see them?
Well, in the 19th century, many of these finds, for instance, the ones in New York I mentioned, created sensation. I mean, people came out to the farm or the cemetery of giants, in many cases unsupervised, and took the skeletons and the bones and the skulls away as souvenirs. Later, there's many cases of the Smithsonian coming out and trying to buy the giant. There was a 9-footer found in San Diego that the Smithsonian bought. Local museums get involved. They get shipped to the local museum, and then the local museum sends them to the Smithsonian. And these things disappear down the memory hole.
Wasn't there another researcher who had theories on why these skeletons were being hidden or suppressed all across the country?
There's been a couple. I'm not familiar.
Herd Leechka? Who's that person?
He took over in 1903 at the Smithsonian, and he was the man that came up with the Bering Land Bridge theory.
Explain.
Which says that all the American Indians came over from Asia and walked.
That's a long walk.
Yeah. And this was, you know, the linchpin of his theory that made his career. And at that time, they were saying these things were maybe 1,000 years old, and that so physically, you know, you could walk through supposedly Alaska and Canada, even though it had glaciers all over the place. A lot of the dates we're now getting are pushing back 10, 12, 14,000 BC, when it would have literally been physically impossible to walk across. And the mound builder culture itself is distinct from what we think of as American Indians. So, I mean, that's part of the problem, you know, is that we have no awareness of the mound builder culture country any longer.
And we're going to get into this more in depth next hour, Richard, but why the suppression of the skeletons? That's what I don't understand. So why don't you simply say, okay, folks, we had 10-foot to 12-foot giants on this planet, and we've got their bones, and we really don't know what happened to them, but they're gone.
Well, that would be the normal response.
Yeah.
But, first of all, it seems to be a worldwide phenomenon, but specifically in relation to the Smithsonian, they were founded on the principle of evolution. I mean, it was the cornerstone of the institution. And they prided themselves on being scientists. And things that smacked of biblical stories or mythical stories, by extension, were considered to be unscientific. And you can't very well have 7 to 12 foot giants roaming around and tell people that we're getting bigger and smarter.
No, I guess you'd have to come up with some explanation on how and why they got here.
Correct. Which would undermine the whole scientific underpinning of the institution.
Good point.
And then because of the fact that many of them are red-haired, blonde-haired, have Caucasian backgrounds, you get the whole question of who discovered America first. You know?
Do you think Goliath from the biblical days was a giant, the kinds of giants that we're talking about right now?
I did some reference, and they seem to think he was 11 feet tall, so he would fit into this overall paradigm very easily.
knocked down by a rock from David.
Well, and the other curious thing is, like the newer earthworks in Ohio, where just all over the state are incredible giant finds of up to 10 feet tall. They also, Ohio University has in their collection, which were, again, Smithsonian said they were originally hoaxes, but they've got versions of the Ten Commandments, sacred bowls. I mean, there's evidence all over. I try to include in the book, you know, a larger context for a lot of this. And the stuff that was also found, you know, there's unquestionably Hebrew, Egyptian, Punic, Phoenician, Roman contact all over the place.
Being from St. Louis, 35 years that I've been out there, of course, we're close to Alton, Illinois, where Robert Wadlow used to be.
Mm-hmm.
He was almost 9 feet tall, died young, of course.
Mm-hmm.
Was he just a genetic mutation of nature?
He suffered from what they call gigantism, which is a tumor in the pituitary.
Okay.
And, you know, he needed supports in order to stand up. I think he died when he was 22 years old.
Yeah, he was young.
These giants that we're talking about are robust physical specimens. They, in many cases, they say, you know, the person appeared to be, you know, over 50 or 60 years old when they died, you know, and they really haven't done any study, but they're clearly not disease, you know, they're not tall because they're suffering from a pituitary.
Were the giants, Richard, that you were able to find in your research, do you think they were, you know, were they wild people, out of control, cannibals, or, you know, did they have some sense
of
it?
There's evidence of ritual sacrifice, and we can get into that, but when you take a broader look at man-builder culture itself, it's extremely pastoral. There's no signs of defensive ramparts. The sacred landscaping of these mounds, there's burial mounds, but then there's these what are called effigy mounds, and they cover the landscape in places like Wisconsin, Minnesota, Ohio, and there's, you know, there's forms of every animal that you can think of. There's human effigies, crosses, all kinds of things. So it seems to have been an agrarian
with some intelligence. They had some intelligence behind them.
Yes. Well, I mean, the grave goods, you know, that's another thing that when I reproduce the stories, I don't just give you, you know, they found a giant and he was 8 foot tall. I include, you know, detailed descriptions of the grave goods that are also being found in there. And they constantly are saying that the quality of the pottery is much higher, the copper work, which is voluminous and found in almost all of these mound burials associated with the giants, are of a very high quality. And a number of these giants are covered in copper jewelry, copper bracelets, copper armor, mica. There's a number of illustrations in the book of pipes and grave goods that come out of the Smithsonian's original publication, 1848, Ancient Monuments of the Mississippi Valley, which was a very beautiful, open-minded look at the whole thing. If you go through the book, you'll see, you know, small figurines of animals and faces.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of those came out of the mounds in West Virginia that also uncovered giants. And the digs were done by the Smithsonian in 1883.
Okay, Richard believes, of course, the Smithsonian has been actively suppressing the physical evidence for at least 150 years about giants. We're going to talk more about the ancient giants who ruled America when we come right back on Coast to Coast AM. I'd like to tell you a little bit about our television program, Beyond Belief, and, of course, free sampling. You shouldn't have to pay for anything until you have heard it or you decide you want it. And you can do that by going to this website, beyondbelief.com. Fill out the information. You've got 10 days to make up your mind before we come and get you. No, I'm kidding, but Beyond Belief is a great TV show. Does a lot of things that we do here with Coast to Coast. And we tie the two shows in together, by the way. So many of the people have been on Coast to Coast before. And they love that experience, and they enjoy Beyond Belief. BeyondBelief.com. Welcome back. Richard Dewhurst with us, of course, as we talk about his work, The Ancient Giants Who Ruled America. Richard, why can't we get an explorer or somebody who might have these bones somewhere and let him go public with it? Or do they all get grabbed?
Well, I'm hoping as a result of this book and a growing awareness of this that people are going to start stepping forward. I mean, one of the things in the book is I try to include very specific locations for these things. And once you begin to see a pattern and you know that these mounds are out there, then with YouTube and all the various technological things, I'm hoping, you know, that people are going to start stepping forward. And I also think that, you know, these bones are in private hands and, you know, eventually, if enough attention is brought to the subject, hopefully the Smithsonian will step forward. In book 1491, they estimate that Alice Herdlishka, whose name is a real mouthful, they say they estimate that he put into storage over 30,000 skeletons, completely unexamined and uncataloged.
All right, let's talk, if we can, about some of the other things that you've uncovered when you're doing this research. And, of course, the big $64,000 question, Richard, is where did the giants come from, in your opinion?
Well, my conclusion is that there was a seagoing people, prehistorical, that were worldwide, and that this culture was not only in the Americas, but had contact all over Europe as well as into Asia. And that many of these mythological stories, the Greeks and the Titans, the Bible stories of Goliath, the Nordic tales, tales out of Iberia, Spain.
It's everywhere.
Everywhere, yeah.
What about the extraterrestrial presence?
Well, I don't really get into that, but I mean, my feeling about the Anunnaki story and everything else is that it's probably tied into these giant. In the book, I refer to another biblical passage from Numbers where they talk about going into a strange land inhabited by the sons of Anak, who come of giants. And when we stood before them, we were as grasshoppers. And I think the sons of Anak, the Anunnaki, mm-hmm. the Anastasi, which are the ancient ones of the cliff dwellers, I think these are all related. And, you know, it may even tie into the stories of Atlantis if you know, we look at it. In a broad context.
Well, you know, what is it possible that, see, the fact that some of them were in North America, does that kind of rule out that they may have died from the flood of Noah? I know it was a worldwide flood, they said.
I think that they died off probably in other parts of the world and may have survived in the Americas for a longer time. But, you know, there's a curious drop-off, you know, around 1200 A.D., and I'm beginning to think that the Mongolian invasion, which brought the Black Plague, may have not only gone towards Europe, but gone into the Americas as well, and may have been a contributing factor to this.
So what did you find, Richard, to be your most startling discovery when you were doing your research for your book?
Well, the most amazing one I came up with that was sourced with multiple witnesses and so on and so forth, reputable newspaper, came out of Ohio. I think it was Hickory, West Hickory, Ohio, which is on the Indiana border near Fort Wayne. And in that case, they dug up an 18-foot giant with a 9-foot sword and an iron helmet that they characterized as resembling the workmanship of Nineveh, which is Assyrian. And that was by far the tallest. After that, the next tallest are 12 feet. And I've got multiple 12-footers down on Louisiana near Poverty Point.
We hear a lot about males, though, being the giants. Were there also giant females?
Absolutely. In Ohio, there's a burial in Marion, Ohio, where there was an 8-foot queen, and then buried on top of her, facing up, was a 9-foot-4-inch king. And then they found 7 related burials near there, and those were all 9-foot and one 10-footer. And they also found an 18-pound red sandstone stela with what they said looked like 2 lines of hieroglyphs on it.
Some of the pictures we've seen on the internet, are they, you know, photoshopped?
I would say probably yes. You know, in this day and age, though, I mean, it's become the easy thing to say when you show anybody any out of context find. Oh, you know, they photoshopped it. And until we have the resources to actually study these photos, I mean, I've seen incredible ones out of India and so on and so forth. You know, we won't ever really know. But if researchers like myself can go to first-person newspaper accounts, historical records, and so on and so forth, and come up with very credible eyewitness accounts to this stuff, it's going to start changing people's minds. You know?
What was the catalyst for the cover-up, for the withholding information on these skeletons?
Well, as I said, theory of evolution being one of them.
But, I mean, at what point did it start? The cover-up.
Well, as I said, the first publication of Smithsonian 1848 was, although they didn't get into giants, I mean, they were very open-minded about all of the mound-building culture that they found in the Mississippi. And the quote from Abraham Lincoln indicates the widespread knowledge. As the 19th century progressed and these policies of the Smithsonian became more predominant, the amount of reporting on this starts to cut off. It goes into the 20th century, and after 1940, I found virtually nothing. You know? And a lot of that relates to government policies, and up to the present day, we've got what's called the NAGPRA policy, which was instituted in 1990, which is the Native American Grave Protection and Repatriation Act.
That means that, for example, if they're going to build something, they've got to dig up everything and move it?
No, it means that if they find any skeletons that are old, they're immediately claimed by the local Indians. And the NAGPRA laws have interfered with the discovery and display of these giant skeletons. There's a case out in Nevada in the Spirit Cave finds where in the 1940s they were excavating bat guano out of the caves out there for saltpeter and gunpowder. And the museum in Nevada had a policy that if they found anything, that they should be notified locally. So the husband and wife team came out there. Under 6 feet of bat guano, they found a series of 6 to 8 foot giants, and these were, well, in that cave, that was Lovelock. In Spirit Cave, they found three. One was supposedly a giant, disappeared. The two others, they say, are well over 6 feet. The thing that's incredible about them is that they were mummified and wrapped in incredibly fine textiles, which were made out of tule fiber, which is like papyrus. And they were immediately filed away and said they, to be 1,000 years old. And then in 1998, an anthropologist from the University of California heard about these, and he went to Nevada and got them out of storage and subjected them to modern testing. And he found out that they were 9,500 years old.
9,500 years old.
Yeah. So we're talking about mummification and incredibly fine textile, thread count wrappings that were preserved by this bat guano. I mean, they're probably the oldest examples of fine weaving ever discovered, and we know nothing about it.
Do you think
now, in that case, NAGPRA comes into this because when the anthropologist got his hands on these things and he began the testing, the Paiute Indians out of Fallon, Nevada, stepped forward and claimed them. And that resulted in almost 10 years of legal battles. And finally, in 2004, they were allowed to test these things, and they discovered that they apparently had Caucasian origin.
How many skeletons do you think are out there?
Thousands. I mean,
and most of them are hidden where? At the Smithsonian?
Well, as I said, I mean, one estimate of they had 30,000 skeletons in storage. And, I mean, these finds, I mean, the Conant finds on Lake Erie was 3,000 to 4,000 skeletons. There was Don Dixon, 90 miles south of Peoria, found a burial ground of 3,000 to 4,000. That was excavated in association with the University of Chicago.
I mean, well,
and Don Dixon left 250 of the skeletons exposed, and it was a tourist attraction for decades. 75 to 100,000 people a year visited. And again, the local Indians stepped forward in 1990 and used the NAGPRA laws to close the whole thing down. Multiple burials, Pennsylvania, they found 60. The Carnegie Museum was involved. They averaged 7 to 9 feet. Moundville, Alabama, they found 400, the 7.5-foot skeleton. Smithsonian in Charleston, West Virginia, Wheeling, found more giant skeletons and detailed in their field report, which is in the book. And then you go out to California and Catalina Island, and then we're off the charts, right? Relation to what they found out there.
And but the suppression is everywhere?
Well, it seems worldwide. You know, it's not only America. You know, there's quite a bit of evidence in the British Isles and Central Europe, Greece, and, you know. For some reason, this seems to get people upset.
Well, maybe they don't want to admit that the Bible's accurate. You know, if you
I think that's definitely part of it. Yes, I do. I really do.
I mean, if you admit that Genesis is correct and there are giants here and it echoes what Genesis talks about, then you have to assume the Noah flood is correct and
correct.
All these other things. And Noah's Ark is correct.
Well, the flood story, I mean, we now know that at the end of the Ice Age, around 10,000 B.C., for, you know, whatever reasons, the sea level rose 400 feet.
Which was huge.
Huge. And, you know, there's voluminous evidence that the Mediterranean was inundated at that point, and they're beginning to start to investigate under the Mediterranean and coming up with all kinds of stuff. I can't understand why it's taken so long.
Are you disappointed, Richard, that this suppression apparently continues?
Well, you know, it feeds into a lot of other conspiracy theories, and people, you know, try to lump it into the same bag as, you know, oh, it's a conspiracy, you know, a bull. You know, there's no such thing as conspiracies. I always say to people, well, if there's no such thing as conspiracies, why is it a felony?
Can you imagine if one of these giants were still alive? Somebody like the Lakers would grab onto that guy.
You betcha.
My God. There's nothing illegal that says you can't have a 10-foot basketball player.
Absolutely not, you know, and you know, I mean, there's no question if you selectively bred tall people, you could probably come up with, you know, an analogous race of tall people. The thing that distinguishes a lot of these finds is the fact that they constantly are talking about how large the lower jaw is. We took the lower jaw, we could fit it over our head. You know, the skull was a half an inch.
Well, do you think they look deformed, or do you think they look truly human-like?
I think they mostly look, you know, like very healthy.
Just a tall human being.
Well, you know, and people have asked me, well, are they us? And you know, I've thought a lot about it, and I really think what we're looking at is perhaps Cro-Magnon man here.
Now, that's an interesting take, because they have that kind of jaw.
Man's average brain was 1,500 cubic centimeters. Ours is 1,200. Okay? So,
technically, he should have been smarter than we are.
Smarter than we are and bigger. You know, and recently, they'll talk about Neanderthals all the time, but they never mention Cro-Magnon man anymore.
Is it possible that the sightings of Sasquatch, Bigfoot, might be some of these giants who are extremely hairy, and maybe that's what people are seeing?
Well, you know, there's a variety of finds, and there's some out west in Arizona where even the Smithsonian was involved, and they said that these were unusual in the extent that they had almost gorilla-like characteristics. So perhaps we're looking, and also in West Virginia, they found elongated skulls or cone heads, and they found them in other parts of the country. So we may be looking at three or four different strains here.
But it's possible they could be Sasquatch.
I
can't rule it out.
Yeah, I can't rule it out. No, absolutely not.
What an amazing discovery that would be. You know, we're talking about...
But, you know, Sasquatch doesn't seem to exhibit high levels of... sophistication and intelligence, and the thing that really distinguishes these man burials. And these things are complex. I mean, you know, when you start reading the detailed reports, you know, they dig into these mounds and they find temples inside.
Big ones?
Standing stones, altars.
Have they found, like, shoes or clothes or anything like that that might have survived, lasted this long?
Well, you know, I mentioned the wrappings of the Spirit Cave mines. There's an incredible story in there of the finds made out in the Death Valley and beyond, out in the borders in there. The accounts say that they found a series of 32 caves over 150-mile square area that had tunnels in them that led into a sacred temple and a large hall. And in that case, they say there was another room with niches in it that had saber-toothed tigers, mastodons, elephants, and dinosaurs. And then there's an account in Lee Canyon, Arizona, of petroglyphs with dinosaurs. And of course, down in South America, we have the Ica stones depicting dinosaurs. Now, people say, well, you know, that's completely crazy. Well, again, as an adjunct to my research, I started looking into that, and it turns out that in the last 10 years, there's two university researchers, one at North Carolina State and another one from Germany, who have been cutting into dinosaur bones. Now, they've never really done that because they've considered them to be, you know, so valuable. But in this case, they've cut into them and found soft tissue and done testing on the soft tissue and come up with dates of 20,000 to 36,000 BC.
Jeez. Well, and imagine these populations in excess of 100,000 giants in Arizona, Oklahoma, Alabama, Louisiana. That's what some of Richard Dewhurst's research shows. I'm George Norrie, back with more on Coast to Coast AM.